Now, we're joined in programme with David Foley, consultant medical herbalist, taking your questions on alternative medicines. David, good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig.
So just remind us of where sort of herbal medicine sits in the... I know we've raked over this ground previously, but it's no harm just like where it sits
Well, some people... alternative, complementary, you know, complementary is a nice word, rather than alternative, you know, because it does complement the rest of the... You know, there isn't just one particular type of medicine. Like, our medicine can be our food, for example, you know. So,
and also, you know, too, you don't want to set it up as an alternative to important medicines that someone might be prescribed to.
You know, you wouldn't be going to a herbalist if you had a heart attack or broke your leg.
No, of course not. I was chatting to someone recently, very bad sinuses, you know, pain, persistent heaviness in the head, had a course of antibiotics, the nasal sprays, offer some relief, still getting it checked out, of course. But, you know, over-the-counter or prescribed medicine, not really shifting the sensitivity and that sense of fullness, etc. Is there anything one
absolutely.
Can take for that?
This is one of the things that actually we're, it's very good herbal medicine, is that actually sinusitis and chronic sinusitis in particular, you know. Often, you know, people get sinuses maybe, and, you know, diet plays a factor too, so it's too much sugar, too much dairy, whatnot, it can clog up the sputum's mucus. Or it could be allergies, you know, it could be allergic to a particular thing like house dust, mite, dog, whatever.
Which,
you know,
can come at any stage in life as
any
well.
Any stage, any know? Type of life, you could develop at any stage. So, you know, the pus's extra mucus, that extra mucus is caught up in the sinuses and can become infected. So antibiotics are used, you know, but often what you'll find is, like, if they're getting it again and again, the antibiotics kill off the bacteria, but actually ends up a fungal infection, you know, and that's very hard to shift, you know, and antibiotics don't have any effect on that. So often if it's chronic sinusitis, the herbs are brilliant for that, you know, they are really clear. We have herbs that really just open up the nose, you know, and really clear out the sinuses, but also deal with the, what's more importantly, the underlying conditions. So if it's allergies, for instance, astragalus, herbs like that can actually, you know, get the immune system, reishi mushrooms, another one, they get the immune system actually change so that in actual fact you're not allergic to that thing. I mean, if you're young, like if you're at my age, like if you're in the later years, it's hard to remove an allergy.
But if it's not, say, for instance, you're not treating the allergy as such, which you should always, what would offer relief for the sinuses?
Well, you see, I do the two at the same time. This is what we do, you know. We have mixtures there that actually would do. So we would treat it, give herbs for the immune system, if it was an allergy, for example. Or even sometimes when it often is an allergy. But, you know, the herbs will help the immune system deal with that so that in actual fact you're less allergic and maybe become completely not allergic to that particular substance. But also the herbs can open up the nose, clear out the sinuses, you know. Like you can imagine, like, you know, when you go to a sushi bar, you'll get horseradish and you get ginger. If you eat horseradish, immediately it goes to your nose, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You eat the ginger, it goes immediately to your stomach. It's like that, you know, certain herbs will go to certain areas of the body. So horseradish is actually one of the herbs we would use to clear up the sinuses. Mm-hmm. It opens the nose.
And you consume that?
Yeah. Well, we'd have a combination maybe of herbs is brilliant for that. You know, we have combinations of herbs.
But with something so common, it's tried and tested.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? I'd say you'd have a lot of people coming
We get lots of people. Because it's one of the things that actually modern medicine, maybe not its best thing, you know, that they're treated. Often has difficulty treating that. Mm. Same with, say, sinusitis, like allergies.
I've had it before and it stuck around. And this sense of fullness and... almost like cloudy thinking. It's a horrible
feeling. Oh, it's a horrible feeling. It's a horrible feeling. If it becomes infected, it's quite dangerous. And, you know, as I say, you know, these herbs are very simple and they're cleared out and maybe if it's an allergy, you can deal with that. Also, hay fever is another thing that comes from allergies. It can be all blocked up too. So we deal, again, things like reishi mushrooms actually get the immune system. They actually get the immune system to deal with, so you're not allergic to it.
No. Yeah, I guess you.
And if you get a 20-year-old or a younger, you know, even in 30s, you can actually, after two or three, you know, seasons of like hay fever, taking reishi mushroom, the allergy's gone, goes away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite amazing.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
A persistent cough. I've tried everything and antibiotics, and nothing is clearing it. Now, a lot of these questions We are presuming that they've been to their GP,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Because if you have a persistent cough, that would be a red flag. So we're presuming they've tried, they've had antibiotics, yeah. They've been dealing with yeah. their GP, right? So yeah. with that being said, anything that could help?
Well, again, you know, it's actually, you know, this is one of the things, it's funny, as you know, being a long time a herbalist, you know, when I started off herbal medicine, for if we didn't see these persistent cough as much as we're seeing them today, and I don't know why it is. Maybe it's like over the years we've become less antibiotics, less useful, let's put it that way. And you know, so but it's often a subclinical infection. So it's the infection is there, but it's subclinical, can't be picked up. So you know, that kind of causes a persistent cough, also tiredness and weakness. You know, because you're just bothered. We have a particular combination of herbs with a tiny little bit of ginseng in it, which is really great. It gets the immune system mm. up. That particular one is very good for that one. It's botanical syrup, we call it. Like it's actually very good to actually relieve that type of cough.
It gives you relief in the moment as well.
Gives you relief in the moment. It's a normal cough bottle, but we added in a little bit of licorice and ginseng, which just gives the immune system a little bit of pick up, and it gets rid of it.
Gout,
you know, well, you know, obviously doubt, and I'm sure like all these, as you said, most people have been with their GPs.
But you're looking at, if you go to your GP and you're getting acute flare-ups, you're on a tablet for life, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know.
Well, the diet, obviously, because the vintage, they know the diet. They know what they shouldn't be.
Some of us just get this citric acid peak. Not citric acid, uric acid peak.
Uric acid peak, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, there's some very simple things, like cherry juice, you know, red cherry juice. Excellent. Also, celery seed, but you have to be careful with celery seed. So you wouldn't want to take celery seed they're going to use for sowing, because there's insecticides and things like that. You can get celery seed in a health food shop, and just a teaspoon of celery seed into boiling water and drink that every day, and that actually helps it get rid of their
flushes acid.
Flushes it out.
So,
exactly.
I mean, I'm actually on a tablet for gout. Now, my diet is not excessive. I don't drink red wine. I don't drink much alcohol, right? So... and I'm not saying my diet's fantastic, but it's less likely. I'm not Henry VIII, right? That's all I'm saying, okay? and I've been put on this tablet, and I don't really mind it. It's not an inconvenience, but I would like to try something more natural. But at the same time, I don't want to discontinue using the tablet and risk a flare-up, you know?
Absolutely. But
I think certainly if you are at that point where you're going back to the doctor a couple of times, they're waiting to see if lifestyle changes will reduce it, that's a really good time, I think, to maybe try some alternative, some complementary remedies.
Complementary, because like celery seed is just, but it does have that ability. Our cherry juice, you know, those two things really have an amazing effect because it's just genetically your way you're made. It's just
the genetics went in our family sort of the other way because I used to get bad flare-ups before I got it treated, and you know, I'd be out socializing with my dad or whatever, and I'd be limping, and he always thought this was great crack that he was healthy and I was limping, and lo and behold then, God rest him, one day I noticed he was limping. I was like, what's going on with you then? It's all nothing. I think I might have turned my ankle. Well, eventually, 3 pints in, he admitted that he had gout.
you're all right, man.
He didn't want to give in, but he had to. So all of those years of taking the hand out of me, the chickens came home to roost.
That is the problem.
Any complementary medicines for reducing cholesterol and blood pressure? I'd be interested in this because I don't have high blood pressure. But I'm kind of in the range whereby it's pre kind of, you know, now if I calm myself down and relax and have the blood pressure on, generally speaking, the doctor doesn't think I need medication right? Yeah. But I do need to up, this is Trisha's question, not mine, but I do need to up maybe my activity, but I'd be very interested also in any complementary remedies for it, because you can track it at home too, you see.
Yeah. Well, there's not, like, to be quite honest with you, with herbal medicine for blood pressure, so, I mean, they say that, like, really the Western diet is caused blood pressure. And, you know, most men as we get older and women, our blood pressure goes up. Very rarely it doesn't. Now, the thing is, like, you know, that herbs themselves will help with, but like hawthorn, for example, is an excellent herb to lower blood pressure, but you're only talking about 10 pints. You know, you're not talking any more
than
that.
So, like, going from 130 to 120.
Yeah, something like that. That'd be the maximum.
But that's the difference between being pre-hypertension, or not pre-hypertension, pre-whatever and not, though. So that's not, for a lot of people listening,
it's
would
helpful,
be a decent...
Which is the main thing with hawthorn is, one of the wonderful things with hawthorn is that, like, it keeps the arteries clear.
Mm.
I mean, I've seen amazing situations where people really, their arteries have... their plaque buildup has lessened and it keeps them clear. So it's brilliant like that. And it's a tonic to the heart as well. So it keeps the heart young, basically. But as regards to bringing down blood pressure, very mild effect, you know. But cholesterol is a thing that, you know, there is quite a few things bring cholesterol down, like, you know. Pan-sterols are great, you know, and they can really help, you know. And you can get that in tablet form, you know. You can get it in butter or in things, or margarines and things.
You see it as an additive.
Yeah, as an additive. But, you know, the tablets are better because it's sometimes, I think, because, you know, you're taking the right amount every day.
Mm.
And that really has an effect.
It's not dependent on how much bread you have.
Sorry?
It's not dependent on how many breads
exactly. So you have and it really does. So I would always, you know, and most doctors would concur with that. Like, if you can get it down using natural methods, do well and good, and that's great. And if you can't, well, that's it.
This one is, David Foley's with me from The Natural Way, talking about complementary medicines. I'm taking blood thinners. Could I take B complex while on Eliquis?
You know, it depends a lot on the blood thinners. I really speak to the pharmacists about that, you know, because some of the blood thinners, you know, you have to be so careful with them, like warfarin and things. Like, you just, it's a hit or miss, you know. So I would definitely maybe talk to the pharmacy is about the best.
A caller says, I started taking folic acid and beetroot juice and have suddenly developed an itch on my skin. Could the itch be related to an allergy to either of them?
It would be interesting. I mean, the only way you're going to find out that is by actually cutting them out for a couple of weeks and going back. Maybe each one individually. It could happen.
Maybe,
you know,
the beetroot juice first, and
just take one and give it up for a couple of weeks, and then go back on it and see what happens. Yeah.
COPD.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a very, very serious lung condition.
Well, you know, with COPD, like, there is a mushroom there called cordyceps, okay? Now, you're not going to do an awful lot with, obviously, COPD, you know, but the thing is, like, you know, cordyceps is the most wonderful. It helps your lungs absorb more oxygen, basically. It helps so that it maybe prevents infections as well, because it helps the immune system. So it would be worth a try. 2 grams a day of cordyceps, wonderful for the lungs, great. Cordyceps is fantastic for asthma and things like that, you know, or chronic cough. But COPD, it just depends on where it's at, you know, and hopefully he'd want to do it for a month at least to see if there's any benefit, you know. But
okay. Can you ask David if he has any advice on dealing with rosacea that's causing great distress to a 28-year-old?
Oh, yeah, it's a terrible thing. Do you know, like, obviously, again, you know, food, and you can easily find out.
That is a form of acne, isn't it, rosacea?
Not really. It's a different thing altogether. Okay. But it's like, you know, certain things that like the kind of, you know, like curries and things like that, teas and coffees and things, make it worse. So you search that and see what things. But, you know, funny enough, one of the things we found really good for it, you know, is echinacea. You know, so like taking echinacea, you know, 5 mils of echinacea twice a day, very good. And you know, even though it isn't acne, it still seems to help bacteria in the body. I don't know how it really works, but we found this trial and error that has worked.
Fatty liver. I've had my gallbladder removed 18 years ago.
Yeah, fatty liver, yeah. You know, one of the great things for a fatty liver is called milk thistle. Very harmless herb, but absolutely wonderful for regeneration of liver cells. Well worth trying that out.
I've been on a heartburn tablet, Nexium, 40 milligrams for years and years. Yeah. I have to take it every day and nothing can be done for me. Is there anything alternative or complementary that might help?
Yeah, it's been on a long time. We were on a long time like that. It's very, very hard to reduce it because, you know, the acid just
That's reflux,
right.
really, they're
yeah,
talking about
is,
there,
yeah.
isn't it?
It is, you see. And what the Nexium does is it suppresses the cells that produce that acid in the stomach. And once you take away the Nexium, then that cells produce far more acid than they would have before. So it is it's a difficult one if you're on it a
I'd
long
be very
time.
Interested to, you know, reassess why they're on that. You know, with your GP, this is not medical advice. Like, I've come across people who've been on that tablet for quite some time and they didn't need it.
Yeah, that's right. It'd be worthwhile to...
It's just, yeah. I mean, at what point with your bodily changes, maybe your diet, your weight, your health, at what point is it tested if you still require that dosage every single day? Yeah. Like, that's a conversation for your GP, but I wouldn't blindly presume that, you know, just double check that, because what checks and balances have been done over the intervening years to ensure that you need to take this tablet absolutely every day?
And, you know, the one of the things I say, like, is that the Nexium water suppresses those cells that produce the acid. So when you come off it, it's much worse, you know. So you really have to have it. Maybe there's another medication that the doctor could recommend that maybe could, you know, gradually maybe research. But if she stops taking that now, Nexium, she's going to have a terrible lot of acid, you know.
Okay.
So she'd really, it's, but there is herbs there like slippery elm and things that soothe the stomach and kite the stomach. So, you know, while she's trying to come off it, like, she'd really have to, she'd have to go back to her GP.
I mean, obviously you need to protect your esophagus, your throat.
Yeah.
It can have impact. So I'm not suggesting it at all. I would just, if you've been on it for years and years and years, is it something that you just have perpetually? I don't know. Any cure for cellulitis, the infection of the skin?
Oh, cellulitis, nasty one too. Do you know, double thing, I would say echinacea again. And you can use echinacea externally. So you dilute it maybe 1 in 5 with water. It stings a bit, but very, very good. So you could dab the echinacea on the cellulitis. And also take echinacea because it will help. Now, if the immune system is often cellulitis, but the immune system is a bit weak, so things like astragalus would help, or the mushrooms like reishi can help to build up the immune system. So that's the methodology, I would say, you know.
Cleansing the liver, Akola wants to ask.
Yeah, well, milk thistle again. Okay. Milk thistle is the number one milk liver cleanser.
Anxiety, OCD.
Oh, anxiety is so common nowadays. It's so common, you know. I mean, we have things like, you know, like peace and calm, which is valerian, basically, you know. And this helps to ease stress a bit, you know. It's really like, I mean, it can be complicated.
Yeah, it can, and I'll tell you, acute anxiety as well, which is something I had, and I did try you never get rid of it. I did try the herbal element of it, but it's you kind of need to get to it, you know. Like, I think if someone's a bit anxious going to bed or overthinking, you know, something that's a relaxant or even something that makes people feel relaxed. But if you've got something that's acute, you know, you can even struggle with prescription medicine with that. So it's I suppose it's complex, doesn't
it's
it?
And very complex.
I think it depends on the type, how impactful it is on your life, etc.
It is. So kind of for anxiety, like exam anxiety, things like that kind of thing, or, you know, whatever, these peace and calm, it can be excellent, you know. But, you know, if it's as you said, this acute anxiety and a very panic attacks and things like that, it's worthwhile going to your doctor, going to a herbalist, actually. You've seen the herbalist too, you know, because they're actually quite, it can be helpful, you know, but it's complicated.
And we were talking earlier on too about how, you know, that lady or gentleman who's taken the tablet for the reflux and they're on it for a long, long time. The mind is, the human mind's a very complex thing, and you can get, you know, low level over the counter prescription medicine from your GP that you don't have to take forever, because sometimes all it takes is for you to get a break from the anxiety or the OCD, and then you can understand in the most clearest way that you don't always have to have it, and then you can maybe ease off the medication and judge it from there. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can be if you have anxiety, even if it's acute, you can get a prescription medicine that might just give you the opportunity to understand that there's another way to live your life. Is what I would suggest. So don't be afraid of that, because sometimes they talk about antidepressants, and then people go, "Well, I'm not antidepressant, or I'm not depressed." Yeah. But it's the part of the brain that it sort of blunts a little bit. It doesn't mean that you're depressed, or it won't trigger depression. But then if you go on short term meds like Xanax or whatever, you know, you can get bounce back anxiety from that because they affect you in a different way. So you just have to be really careful. The only thing is don't live with that. Go and have a conversation with the GP. Try a short term medicine. And then once you can see the wood for the trees and realize your life doesn't have to be like that forever, then some of the medicines that you have in the health shop might just help maintain the person post prescription medicine. Does that make sense?
Absolutely,
that's not to say it doesn't have any effect, but I'm just saying you don't have to live your life like that. Alternative HRT for women. HRT really, really important. I suppose we're talking about women pre, during, post menopause. I presume.
We have we've got wonderful herbal combinations for that. You know, it actually is very effective. And you know, the thing is with HRT, sometimes it's necessary to have HRT, but HRT does lead to other complications. So if you can try alternative or complementary medicine for that, it can be very effective, and you can get over those symptoms and you don't have to HRT.
All right. Hi, Greg. Holistic or herbal medicine should never be known as alternative. It actually is the original. What we get from doctors are majority pharmaceutical medicines, synthetic, created in a lab rather than natural food, herbs grown in nature. The thing is that's your point of view. We're past the point now whereby, for instance, that the fantastic work David does for a period, people would have, snake oil or whatever term.
Yeah, that's right.
Doctors now understand the benefits of the work the likes of David does. But David also understands, I'm not putting words in your mouth, the importance then of prescription measurements.
Absolutely.
And it's about, we've got past, I think, the war of words between.
Yeah, one or the other. It isn't one or the other. That's why I like the word complementary, because it's complementary. We can all work together to try to make someone better. Exactly. And sometimes even with all the best intention from everyone in the world, we can't, help.
Exactly. But I think that the either or, we're at a point now where we can have a very useful, hopefully, conversations for people. We didn't get to all the questions, but listen, you are there, available, as is your staff, and there are other fantastic health stores right across the county as well, down at the Natural Way, located in
the shopping centre of Letterkenny.
Okay, and you and your staff more than happy to answer any concerns people might have in person. But thank you for answering all the questions.
Thank you, and happy Christmas to all their Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you, and a happy birthday to you on the 5th.
Thank you very
much. David Foley from The Natural Way. We'll be back after the break. Now, our next guests on the programme are Senan Morris. Good morning, Senan.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
Thank you so much for joining us. And we also have Sean Keyes. Hi, Sean.
Hello, Greg. How are you doing?
Thanks so much to the pair of you for joining us. Right, okay. Atlantic Technological University successfully deployed a new smart water monitoring system in rural Uganda, a technology engineered here in County Donegal that's improving access to clean, safe water for thousands of people in communities that rely on single hand pumps for their daily supply. So where does this story start in terms of, I suppose, identifying the problem and then working on a solution? Which came first?
Well, it turns out that one of the members of our steering committee, we both work for WISER, which is both a technology gateway and a laboratory based at ATU Donegal. And one of our steering committee was traveling in Africa, was visiting one of the wellheads, one of the boreholes, discovered they were having difficulties with it, and came from a very long career in electronics and believed that his connections back here with the WISER lab could be used to sort that problem out and to send information back about the state of the pump.
Yes, but what does it do? So does it identify if there is an issue, or does it sort of improve the quality of the water, or does it flag when the water is not of a quality to drink? Or how does it work?
Well, it's more a case, Greg, of actually monitoring the performance of the pump. So the water is the water, and irrespective of whether you lowered a container down to draw it up or used the pump, it's going to be the same water. But the pump itself is very mechanical. It's used quite a lot, and it's subject to wear and tear. And what the monitoring electronics basically does is it gives us an indication of how much the pump has been used, and it also gives us little clues as to whether different parts of the pump are likely to fail.
And maybe it's obvious. How does that then improve access to clean, safe water?
Well, typically what happens is that if a pump fails, the pump's there in the first place to provide good quality water from very deep aquifers beneath the ground. And if the pump fails and it's too expensive for the local communities to fix, they've got no real alternative but to walk for miles and hours to go and find water from the source that they used to do before the pump was
of there. A lesser quality potentially as well.
Far lesser quality, and that leads to all sorts of things like sickness, and the school kids don't attend school because of the poor quality water. So the knock-on effect is huge.
Senan, you are a WISAR research engineer, but you also, if I'm correct, were in Uganda to oversee the installation. So I suppose, what can you tell us about the situation that you come across, and also, you know, what you left behind you, if that makes sense?
Yeah, Greg, I've been lucky enough to travel out to Uganda twice in the past 2 years now. And look, when you first arrive out there, you first realize that, look, it's a fairly underdeveloped country, beautiful country, lovely, friendly people. But once these boreholes stop working, life is very, very difficult for the communities out there. Now, as Sean was saying earlier, they have to resort back to going to get the water from previous sources. And look, It isn't a pretty sight. Some of the places that they have to go retrieve water from, they have to go retrieve it from surface spring wells, which are full of E. coli, full of all different types of bacteria. And on top of that as well, it's predominantly women that go to lift the water, and they be carrying 25 liter drums in their right hand, 25 liter drums in their left hand, and they're also, which is quite impressive to see, carry one in their head as well. And on top of that, they could be carrying a child on their back and a child on their front. So look, what we've delivered gives us an opportunity to see, detect if any issues arising in the borehole before the pump shuts down.
And Senan, the pump presumably is the pump is the pump, right? So it's very mechanical, and you are have developed a software solution. So how complicated was it to get, you know, the two technologies, if I could put it like that, to talk to each other effectively?
Well, first of all, I would have to give the juice to the two engineers that developed this first. Now, I was only the installation engineer and overseeing the installation and the testing, but it was Shane McCrossan, who's in the room beside me, who's too shy to come on there, so he was, and Martin Bradley, who's a lecturer. Look, there was quite some time put into this. There was a few revisions, this has been long in the works, maybe the past 5-6 years. The guys did great work in retrofitting the existing electronics into the pump. So look, it was difficult. There was a lot of research put into how we measured certain parameters. So we're looking at water volume. We're measuring the amount of strokes, and it's a small solar-powered, battery-powered device. And from it's amazing from those few parameters that you're measuring, what you can tell about what's happening in the pump.
Sean, it went from obviously research to reality, right, and has been installed on the ground. But I presume, you know, is there an appetite or interest at this point to roll this out to other, pumping points, for an example, so that the authorities in the area can sort of access the network of pumps if it exists like that? I'm sort of imagining what it might be like. It's not from a knowledge position, Sean.
Yeah, well, you're asking a very pertinent question. It does take time. The original number of units that we popped out there, Greg, was quite small. Then, as Senna said, we've got 10 now that are active in the field. The next step would be to go up in multiples of 10. So we would see hundreds going out in the next wave. And there is that critical tipping point where if the technology is robust enough and if it has proven itself at scale to work, and most importantly, if you can get the cost per unit down, because as you would imagine, it's quite expensive to turn out small volumes of these. Once we get to an attractive price point and a robust technology, then it's pretty much easier to receive a green light.
I must ask, because it's my curiosity is getting the better of me. How does this device communicate?
That's another excellent question. The device is monitoring the pump every second, but it only phones home once an hour.
Uh-huh.
So it's gathering all the information. It's been very thrifty with the electricity on board. Even though it's solar powered, we like to have it operating at a very low power draw whilst it's operational. Then every hour, it phones home via the mobile phone network in Africa, and that information goes straight to the cloud. So just in the same way that the water is going into containers, the data is going into a data container on the cloud.
Obviously, for monitoring purposes and to make sure everything's working, you get to monitor that as well. It must be quite interesting to be sitting in an office in Letterkenny and getting all, to all intents and purposes, real-time updates of the usage of a pump in rural Uganda.
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, Greg, because everybody fancies themselves now as expert data scientists. So as soon as something interesting happens, we're getting all sorts of phone calls to say, oh, I see pump number 7's misbehaving itself, or is the charging working on pump number 8? So yeah, it is correct. It's you're talking about thousands of kilometers away, and that information is just coming onto the screen to us and Tony Gall, and indeed anybody else that has the link.
Can you tinker with the software? Can you over-air updates?
Yeah, well, at the moment we do quite a lot of work on the back end and the front end of the software. On the actual firmware that exists on the devices, the next batch of devices that will go out will have over-the-air capabilities. But in order just to keep the cost down and in order to meet our timeline targets, we just went in this phase with a single firmware. And that firmware has been developed right through all the different versions that we have put out into the field.
Mm. All right, Sanan, the experience of being over there, it gives you a great insight, isn't it? You know, because you can create the software here, you can create the hardware, you can create the infrastructure and how it's powered and all that type of stuff. But it's only really, I suppose, when you get down on the ground and you see it installed and you get a sense of, you know, what's actually, you know, how people are living there, but also how technology can come from here to there and make their water supply, their clean water supply, you know, more reliable.
That's it, Greg. It's only when you go out there that you see the difference it's making, and you see how these people are relying so heavily on water and how appreciative they are that you're out here doing this work for them. So, you know, it makes you, I was going to say, a very proud Donegal man, but he's a dairy man there. But, well, they accept him as a Donegal man.
They never want to be accepted. So in my experience of dairy people is they're very happy with where they're from, even if they're here for 40 years. So I don't think we're going to win him over, Sean, are we?
No, well, I've got my Donegal passport, Greg.
But you're a dairy man.
It makes you very proud to know that, you know, work that was carried out here in Letterkenny is having such a lasting impact for the people of Uganda. So,
brilliant stuff. Okay. And like all good technologies, I presume it can be sort of repurposed down the line to meet other needs as well. Listen, brilliant stuff, lads. Thanks so very much indeed. Sanan Morris, Wizar research engineer, Sean Key, software lead. Both of you, thank you very much indeed for your time today. Greatly appreciated.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks for having us, Greg.
And a big hello to the shy ones as well. Okay, look after yourselves. Thanks very much indeed. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number there. If you want to comment on that or anything that we've been talking about, or 07491 25000. Card scams, of course, says time we dumped the cards and went back to the cash full time. But listen, pickpockets, fake notes, you know, there's cash scams left, right and centre. Money being stolen from under the beds in your house from the from the cereal box in your kitchen. You know, we're talking about this is almost separate to the cash re-digital thing, because people get done out of cash and have been done out of cash since we were going back and dealing with gold. So I don't believe, and then we become sitting ducks in our own homes if we have a distrust of banks. And but so I agree with you. I understand where you're coming from, but just life is a little bit more blooming complex than that. All right, back with the last segment after these. The Central Executive Committee member of the INTO, Áine McGinley, joins him now. Áine, thank you for your time and good morning.
Good morning, Greg, and thanks for having me on the show.
Right, so the Department of Children has said that the Department of Education and Youth would shortly agree a new process to remove the professional assessment of need reports, this for children who wish to enter special classes and special schools. So what would be the situation at up until now, Áine, just so people who wouldn't be in the loop understand exactly what we're talking about?
Yeah, so Greg, what happens currently is an assessment of need is carried out to diagnose disability and to identify health and educational needs in children. So heretofore, teachers have been integral in this to complete the forms along with the parents, because this is a parent-initiated system, to fill out the forms with regards to educational needs of the children. And what the reason for this is to identify educational needs in the children, but also with signposting them towards supports. Now, the problem has been that there is currently 18,000 cases waiting in the system, waiting to be heard. And there is also a lack of supports there in terms of therapeutic supports, counselling supports, and of course this long additional waiting list. But schools have been integral in supporting parents with identifying needs for their children, and as I said, trying to identify and signpost supports available to them.
Now, some might say
special classes or special schools. Yep. That's a part of the process.
Okay, Áine, some might say, look, this is an easy way to distract from a conversation about 18,000 children awaiting assessment. Or it might say, look, with the best will in the world, the system we currently employ has led to 18,000 children for an assessment. Maybe there is a better way to do it. Is it fair to criticise it before we have a look at the new process?
Well, I think the problem that we're having with it at the moment, Greg, is that the minister announced this on Tuesday, but has not consulted with any of the relevant stakeholders, hasn't consulted with parents, hasn't consulted with the educational staff that are involved in this, hasn't consulted with the unions. And we have no idea what it is going to be replaced with. So they've left everybody up high in the sky, because we don't know what is going to come. And if they replace this with something else, they have said to us that it is going to be replaced with something by next September. But we have no idea what that something is going to be.
Mm. And what might that process of determining eligibility for special education might actually be? Do you know what I mean? Because if there are resources there, we have to ensure that those that need them get them, but they're not misplaced either.
Absolutely. But the thing is, we have a system in place currently, and while there is a massive waiting list for that, the difficulty is we don't know what it's going to be replaced with. So we don't know what the new system is going to look like. So we don't know if the children will get the supports that they're meant to be getting. We've heard over the last 2 years through the media, and not through the government, that they're going to have additional staffing teams. We don't know where those staffing teams are going to come out of. Because we know currently staff in schools know that the current system isn't working, but we know that the support services are not there. Any supports that parents are getting for their children at the minute, they have to fight hammer and tongue to get. So I don't know where they're going to get these additional support systems for these children for with a different system, because it's not those support systems aren't available with the current system either.
It doesn't make for a great working relationship, because, you know, outside of parents and guardians, some of the greatest advocates for highlighting, I suppose, supports for children with special needs not being where they need to be are teachers. And then you have them sort of, you know, finding out third hand information that has a direct impact on the kind of sort of care and education that they can give. It's not a great way of doing business when you're making decisions with zero consultation with one of your key partners.
Well, this is the thing. And we, as I said to you, Greg, we heard about this through the media. We didn't hear about this. The department and INTO would have regular meetings, and this has never come up at a meeting. So when we heard about it through the media on Tuesday, we thought there must be an error in the system. There must be an error in the message. And then to discover, yes, this is actually what the minister has announced. And she just said there'll be something else in place come next September. And we have absolutely no idea what it is. So in fairness, we've had, I've had members contact me asking me, you know, surely something has come up in your conversations with the department. And I've had to say, no, we have no idea. And I've also had parents who I be friendly with, who've got children with special needs, saying, well, do I continue with this current assessment of need process or do I not? Because we know now come next September is going to be replaced with something else. And I just don't have the answers for people at the moment. It's very, very frustrating.
Yeah. Okay. And I think they're looking also perhaps at how assessment is carried out outside of this kind of school environment in other spaces. But Anya, listen, we appreciate your views and those of the INTO. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Greg. And look, hopefully I will have some clarity for you soon.
Yeah,
thank you.
For sure. We're in a clarity vacuum, both of us. Okay, thank you, Anya McGinley, Chief Executive Committee Member of the INTO. It's a complicated area because the departments are saying that, you know, because of the system the way it is, parents are trying to go to other services to get, it's very complex. And even some of the groups and individuals that are representing parents of these children are still trying to ascertain precisely what all is going on, because we had that announcement, didn't we, of 44 three-person assessment of need teams to be deployed around the country. But of course, that has to be delivered as well. So we're all kind of trying to find out more information before people take a particular stance on certain things. No, Greg, the LED headlights are blinding and I suspect are contributing to collisions at night on narrow roads. It's ridiculous how bright they are. The other distraction is the touchscreen infotainment systems, but it's too easy to blame the drivers than to address other issues relating to accidents like the four I mentioned and the state of the infrastructure. I love my technology and I love as much technology in the car as possible, but I do have to check myself because personally, if you start using your touchscreen in the centre console, I, for one, dependent on where, you know, and it's dependent on how far I sit, I'm reaching and leaning and I'm trying to do it without looking. And it's equally as distracting as a mobile phone. Equally distracted, because you still really, if you do it as it's designed, have to take your eyes off the road to address it. And I've kind of tried to bring that up over the last couple of years and with sort of road safety experts, and no one's really bit, to be honest with you, no one's really taken me on. Correction, it's 5 years of social media history, the email you've used for 10 years and names of close relatives and where they live. And if you delete any of that, it's destroying evidence. A US citizen was just locked up yesterday by the FBI for just doing this. Re-presents for teachers. As a primary teacher, I do not expect a gift. The children are the gift, but I do appreciate and held onto every card I've ever received. That's what really means something, isn't it? Listen, thanks. It's great to get the feedback from teachers. Because of this show is on, often when teachers are at work, you kind of feel you're talking about them and not to them. So I always do welcome, very much so, by the way, the feedback from teachers when they can do so. Okay, that's where we leave it on the show for another day. We're back tomorrow morning and it's a cracking Friday show.